Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenyon-Yang, recording from downtown Nicosia. And with me, all the way from Virginia, the US of A, I have Nefin Dinch. Welcome, Nefin.
Thank you.
To introduce you to the listeners, Nefin is a producer and a director of documentary films, and she's presently teaching at the James Madison University School of Media and Arts and Design in Virginia. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. To put the listeners into perspective, I was introduced to you because your most recent documentary was shown here in Cyprus called Wine Dark Sea. It was finished in 2024, and it has to do with the environment. Tell me a little bit about it. Tell me a little bit about that movie, because the title of that documentary comes from Homer, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct, yes. Okay, so, we got a grant from the U.S. mission in Turkey, meaning the embassy and the consulate in Turkey, American consulate in Turkey. We're looking for a proposal which would also touch upon the environmental issues, and we wrote a proposal and won the grant, and this is how the documentary came about. And I've been collaborating with a Greek writer. His name is Iraklis Milas, Hercules Milas. He's originally from Istanbul. We made two previous films before Wine Dark Sea, and we knew this documentary was going to be about the global environmental issues in the Eastern Mediterranean. But we wouldn't be able to travel all of the country, so we picked Turkey, because I'm from Turkey, Greece, because we made many documentaries about Greece and Turkey together with Iraklis, and Cyprus, because again, we screened our previous film in Greece, and also in Cyprus.
In Cyprus.
So that's how, and I think our other advisor came up with the name Wine Dark Sea. He works at Bilkent University. His name is Yannis Grigoriadis. He's Greek. So this is an international collaboration.
And tell me why the environment? Why did the environment bring you together? I mean, I know why, but why particularly in this instance did the environment?
To be absolutely honest with you, U.S. mission was looking for a project related to environment. Okay. That's why. But of course, we shaped it. It could have been just a series of interviews done in Istanbul in an office. But we didn't want to do anything like that. If you remember the documentary, everybody is outside doing their own thing. Like people at the fields near coal mine talking about the issues. So we didn't want to do a very boring, straightforward, one-dimensional
movie.
Yes.
I must admit, I've been to Turkey a few times. And when we were taken to visit the Princess Islands, the pollution of the sea was so appalling, and it's something that you cannot not miss.
Yes, yes.
You can't miss. I mean, it's there, it smells, it's in front of you, and you have this magnificent, these magnificent islands with the magnificent architecture, slightly dilapidated, but that's not the issue. And then you've got this total neglect and degradation of the environment on the land, and it takes it into the sea. It was, I wasn't particularly into the environment in inverted commas there, but when I went to Princess's Island, I was appalled that this beautiful place, people were not concerned about keeping the sea clean.
Two things. One, I don't mind if the feeling is a little bit dilapidated. I
agree with
prefer
you.
It. because we don't need to make everything brand new, squeaky clean, and the very latest fashion type, you know, environment. So I like that feeling. We don't need to, you know, build new things and make the old ones look brand new and, you know, really fashionable. I actually don't like it at all. But nobody asks me when they are.
Now, I agree with you. I love the oldness of the Princess Islands and the old architecture. Some things are falling apart. I love that. It's part, it shows the history. I agree with you there.
That's why we started the documentary in the Sea of Marmara. It's not actually Mediterranean, but we wanted to show how especially that sea snot, mucilage, destroyed the city. And of course, when it happened a few years ago, it also traveled a little bit south of Dardanelles. So of course, it affected the rest of the sea, but it was happening in Marmara. But we still wanted to start with Marmara, because it was what was happening was unbelievable, that mucilage thing. And there's a diver, scuba diver, at the beginning of the film, he says, as if you remember, these seas were like the Kızıldeniz, what is it? Red Sea. Red Sea.
Crystal.
Now you don't see 1 meter away from the diver.
Now, I agree with you. As I said, I mean, I spent a lot of my years living on Rhodes, the Greek island of Rhodes, which is across the road from Marmaris. And we prided ourselves, the Aegean Sea, this magnificent sea, the clean and clear, and you could see down to the bed of the ocean, the sea. And now, and it's all something we see in front of us, and most of us don't do anything about it. In fact, we make it worse. Tell me, what kind of reception has the movie had?
People are surprised how bad things are when they watch the documentary. Like, I was surprised when I was filming, the documentary. For example, we went to Ali Ağa. It's very near Smyrna, Izmir. It's a very beautiful, it's supposed to be a very beautiful place, but there are all sorts of factories, really, really bad pollution. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe my eyes, how polluted the whole land and the sea was. And it's still going on. There's no, you know, slowing down. So, yeah, I was surprised. So,
has it has it had any effect on activists or policymakers?
The documentary film.
Yes.
You know, screening a documentary is a huge deal. It's not easy. We finished the film in April 2024, and I screened it at a few film festivals. Now it's being screened at MUBI, and then afterwards it will be screened at Waterbear. I don't know, you know, about that streaming service. It's an international streaming service on environmental issues. I get in touch with everyone to screen the film for free, like they did in Cyprus. And the film will be also screened in, you know, at the universities. I'm, you know, giving the film for free for people to screen it. But just one film wouldn't make a huge change.
Make a
Maybe
difference.
It's a drop in the ocean.
But we need more drops. So one drop, it's one drop at a time.
Yes.
I looked at the different types of documentaries you have done, and I'm interested to know, how do you choose them, beyond the fact that a lot of the time the funding directs what you film, but you also need to, even if it directs you to do something, it's also got to be something that resonates with you.
For sure. You know, I'm from Turkey, so I have close ties with the country. I am also very interested in what happened in the history and how it affects us today, to, you know, to kind of deeply understand what's happening today. I would like to look at the history. For example, we made a film with Iraklis Milas, the writer I've been working with. He has great books, by the way, in English and in Greek and in Turkish. I would strongly recommend.
Okay, thank you. I'll note it down.
When I was studying in Ankara at Ankara University, I read his books. There was one that affected me deeply, and it was called, I will say it in Turkish, Tencere Dibin Kara, Seninki Benden Kara, meaning it's an idiom in Turkish, like you are criticizing me, but look at yourself, you need to look at yourself as well, something like this. And it was very insightful. So when I had a chance to make my, perhaps more or less, the first professional documentary, I got in touch with him, asking if we could make a film about Turks and Greeks. And after a few discussions, he agreed to work with me. And we made a documentary film called The Other Town. And I'm very happy that we were able to screen it all over the world, even in Hiroshima.
In fact, when I looked at the trailer of The Other Town, I've seen it somewhere.
You've seen the film?
I've seen the film because I looked at it. I checked you out on Google, and it showed all the documentaries. And for The Other Town, it had a trailer, and I looked at it and I thought, but I've seen this before. And I think it's a wonderful, it's very insightful, but you speak about it.
Sure. So basically, we went to two towns, one in Turkey, one in Greece. These are small towns. The one in Greece is in Dimitrana. I'm trying to pronounce it correctly. Dimitrana is a small town south of Greece. And we also went to Birgi, and it's near Smyrna, near Izmir. Because they have a history about the other, meaning the Turks or the Greeks. And we filmed all the history lessons, religious holidays, national ceremonies, museums, to see how one nation looks at the other. And we find out that what we are being told may not be the truth.
The truth. Yeah.
And we are conditioned to not to question what we are being taught, which is deeply problematic.
This also is very relevant when you live in Cyprus with the division. Correct. And if you are too young of a certain age, you've never lived in a mixed village or in a united Cyprus. So you're always fed through the system in both communities of the other has horns and he's bad and he's vicious and doesn't like me and wants to kill me. So it's when I was listening to the documentary, I thought, this sounds so familiar.
Yes. And we screened the film in Cyprus too, The Other Town, and the screenings went really well. We screened it in everywhere in Cyprus, also at Buffer Zone. And it was received really well at the time. But again, it's a drop in the ocean. I don't know how much difference it made. We finished the film in 2011. We are in 2024. I wonder how much change has happened since then.
Well, I think what helped in Cyprus is the fact that the partial opening of the checkpoints. Because I think before the checkpoints opened, there was this fear of the other or this misconception of the other. I think the misconceptions are less. Doesn't mean they fear less or they feel more positive, but this thing that they are so different from us and have horns or forked tongues or whatever you want to say, that I think that has lessened with the partial opening of the checkpoints. And one documentary might be a drop in the ocean, but there are a lot of documentaries that go around, and I think the more they are screened and they more not only go to buffer zones but go to the smaller villages or the schools, that one drop together with a lot of other drops, will help to change, or at least mm-hmm. question. Might not come change, but at least will help people question or rethink.
Yes, yes, but until these films, mine and many other wonderful films, are screened at national TV.
I agree with you.
It is not going to make the change we wish to see quickly.
and unless these kind of films are actually put into the school system. Yes. They screened in the school system and are open to an honest conversation.
Yes.
I agree with you. I agree with you. We had a wonderful project here in Cyprus that was run by the Association for Historical Dialogue and Research, and the project was called Imagine, and they were taking kids from primary schools from each community and teaching them together, and it was going really well. It was an Imagine Peace project until the administration changed in the north and Akinji left mm-hmm. and Tata came and he froze it. And now the Greek Cypriot community are turning on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sad, but they need to be in the schools, because I agree with you. It's not good enough to just be shown in public spaces. It's got to be part mm-hmm. of the syllabus. Was that a difficult movie to shoot? Did you enjoy shooting that movie, The Other Town? How did you feel when you would hear what they would say?
Well, it was a demanding project because we visited these towns for over a year, both of the towns, and I was at the time teaching in Buffalo. So I used to fly from Buffalo to Izmir, film some, and then fly to Athens, film a little bit, and then go back to Buffalo to teach. But it was dear to my heart, and it was wonderful to work with Iraklis. So we pulled it off. Because I was working with Iraklis, and because I was familiar with his books, I was expecting these things, to hear these things. I was not surprised at all. And I had many Greek and Cypriot friends when I was studying in Glasgow years ago. So, and of course, I have many Turkish friends. I know how conditioned people are.
So you were expecting, but isn't it still surprising?
What?
Because I agree with you. A lot of the time, you know what you're mm-hmm. going to hear. But then when you hear it, you still get surprised?
I was sad about the little kids, because we also interviewed little kids like they are around 9 or 10 years old. And, yeah. you know, it was very sad to hear that they don't question. They repeat all the poems and all the
this political narrative, the public
and
narrative.
They were never nowhere near questioning what they were being taught, basically.
I think that is the saddest part, and I think it's what a lot of us battle with when you live in this kind mm-hmm. of community, when you've got kids in the school system, and you're constantly saying, question. Ask questions. Don't believe blindly. Believe what you want to believe, but make sure you're believing it because you understand it, not because someone has told you it's the truth, because there is no absolute truth.
Yes.
So it is a challenge. It is a challenge.
I want to say something more about it. I know, I'm a little bit more knowledgeable because I studied in Britain and I studied political science. So maybe I questioned it a little bit more before I made the documentary. But working with Iraklis also was an eye-opener for me, because he pointed out some of the stereotypical ideas I had in my mind as well. And that's why most of the documentaries make films, because it changes them as well.
Yes. Okay. That's true. I hadn't thought of it like that. But this ties in nicely with one of the next movies you made, Through My Lens.
Yes. Again, we got a grant, a very large grant actually, again from the U.S. mission in Turkey, from the embassy and the consulate. And we traveled in 6 small cities in Turkey for 1.5 years. And we taught high school and university students how to make short films on democracy, human rights, environmental issues. And at the end, they made 72 short films.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And they were screened all around the world, too. And some of the students went to those screenings. And some of the students also came to the U.S. with us to work with American students. So it was a wonderful project, again.
But it must have been a difficult process because you're saying it was about democracy and human rights. Would they agree? How difficult was it for each of the schools to come together and agree on the approach of the documentary?
Well, we were not able to go to schools. We advertised at the schools, at high schools and universities, but then we gathered at municipalities or any other venue we found because we went to those cities as the film crew. And then we taught at some venues, not at the schools themselves.
Okay. But did this subject not generate a discussion before they agreed? Because they all came because they wanted to learn about documentary mm-hmm. making and democracy and human rights. But not everyone came with the same approach.
No, that's why, and I would do it a little bit differently if I do it again. We brought some experts on human rights and democracy to talk to students first, to give them a general idea about how to approach to these issues. I'm talking about students. Okay. And it helped. But of course, again, you couldn't change everybody's minds about democracy and human rights and what it should mean in just one project. But I think it was very helpful. Most of the parents of the students sent their kids because they wanted them to have a job, like get a job after this project. But our idea was to basically give the students an outlet to speak, like think about their lives, what's happening around them, and then have an outlet as like filmmaking to talk about their issues, their struggles, and their worries in life.
It is. So you were trying to give them a tools yes. to express themselves
yes.
and be themselves.
And I worked with Atlantic Film in Istanbul in this project. And another, let's say, mentor I work with is Reha Erdem. He's a famous filmmaker in Turkey. And he said that these students never think about what their own thoughts are about these issues. Nobody asks them what their opinion is about these issues. And mostly it's true. They are just being fed, you know, the regular education system and whatever it wants to teach them. And also the families and the other societal structures just feed them ideas. So when we taught them, asked them what they think about certain issues, it was a new thing for them, very new thing for the students, if it makes sense.
And would they reply, or did it take time for them to actually express what they really felt?
Some of them, and their families were usually different, they took some time to process what they were being taught and then reply. Some just repeated what they've been thought throughout the years in the educational system, basically.
Okay, it's actually a challenge when you've got a strong educational system or a strong political
yes.
narrative to get the young adults to start thinking that you don't have to agree. In fact, you shouldn't automatically
yes.
agree.
So in that sense, The Other Town and Through My Lens are very similar because we are questioning the, you know, general
the yes, public narrative.
Yes.
I'm going to take you back to your first documentary mm-hmm. because I'm a woman activist, gender mm-hmm. activist, and it's called I Named Her Angel. This was in 2006. Is this the first documentary you produced? Mm-hmm. tell me a little bit about it, because it's got to do with two subjects that are important. It's got to do with gender and it's got to do with religion.
Well, I was studying in Texas at that time. I made other films before it, but this was maybe the first independent film I've produced. And it was a short film, and it was my graduate degree project, film project. While I was studying there, the war in Iraq started, and I couldn't believe. I was very naive, I think. And I remember Bush and...
it was the beginning of the Arab Spring.
No, the war in Iraq.
Okay. 95.
It must be...
I'm trying to think. Carry on.
It doesn't matter. And Bush was the president of the U.S., and he declared the war, and I couldn't believe the narrative again that was repeated by my friends and the people I come across with in Texas. They were saying that we are bringing democracy to Iraq. What's wrong with that? Why wouldn't they want this? And I was, again, to counter that argument, I made this film. You know, Islam is not what you think. It's not a whole entity, very similar in every country. It's different, and you need to understand it before forming your opinion. That was my idea. That's why I made this very short film. But it's not, that's not what I am directly saying in the film. I always say what I want to say indirectly. Basically, it's about this very young Turkish girl. She was 12 at the time. She must be right now at 25 years old right now. And I wonder what she's doing, actually. And she was learning about Mevlevism, you know, the whirling dervishes. So through her story, I was telling a different aspect of Islam, basically. And again, it's about, you know, of course, religion and also gender issues, because, you know, how she changes throughout the documentary is interesting to watch.
And are dervishes, do women go and learn how to do the whirling, or is it a masculine thing?
No. both of the genders can participate. The ones at least I filmed at, there was no difference. They would sing together, make music together, and whirl together.
And these schools were to train them in terms of what Islam stood for, or was the intention anything else? Was it just learning the religion?
Just learning Mevlevism. And it wasn't only the Turks. Okay. When I was there, there were many people coming from all around the world. Learning the, you know, the tenets of Mevlevism.
And also, Mevlevism is also known as Rumi. Mevlana is also known as Rumi.
The same.
So it's a philosophy.
Yes, it's a philosophy, and it's about being, you know, open to everyone and accepting everyone as they are, without criticizing them. That's the basic tenet of Mevlevism.
But I do agree with you. I think all religions, and especially Islam, is used so negatively. Mm-hmm. And it appears to be prescriptive, as if you have to do this, and gender equality is not part of Islam, and you've got to be barbaric, and you've got to take over. I think they're doing a disservice to the people that are true believers, because I think we all have faith in something. So it's nice to see. I think we need to remember that, and especially Mr. Bush, President Bush, turned the world upside down with how they saw Islam and anyone that was a Muslim.
Yes.
These dark-headed, bearded men with turbans that flew into the World Trade Center. So I do think we need to remember, in all our religions, because the Greek Orthodox is similar. The Greek Orthodox is similar. Surprisingly enough, in the Cyprus context, the Greek Orthodox Church has a bigger say than what the imam has. And technically, the mum are more conservative. We anyway, so it's nice to see. It's not nice. It's good to also show the truth of each of the religions, because each of the religions is how you interpret as well.
Yes.
And very few of them want fear, okay? Very few of them are based on fear. They're based on love rather than fear.
By the way, I would like to mention that I'm not a very religious person and I am not a whirling dervish. I just wanted to stood by with a group of people who were not portrayed correctly in the media. That's why I made the film.
And to be honest, the whirling dervishes are actually, I think even with their movements, they are quite, it's a softer look of Islam.
That's correct.
I think. It's easier to portray them because they actually did a show with some cocoa practitioners, and there was some religious thing, and they showed these whirling dervishes in a show here, and the whirling and the rhythm and the ritual was magnificent to watch.
Yeah.
That's actually do with faith. It's got to do with discipline. It's got to do with focus. So I agree with you. I'm also not religious, but I do agree that most faiths I know a bit about are based on love. They're based on focus. They're based on community building. They're based on inclusion. They are not based
on
fear and division and someone taking over of the other. So we're on the same page. We're on the same page on this. Tell me, what else drives you when you select a movie that you want to do? Besides the what are the subjects that are close to your heart?
Actually, right now I'm at a hiatus, so to say. I stopped making films just to understand myself better, just to understand the world around me better. Because I want to make something new, something never done before, something fresh. And for that, you need to stop and observe.
Yes, take a step backwards.
I'm at that stage right now. So I don't know. And also finding money to make documentaries is excruciating. It's a very difficult process. So I want to just relax a little bit and not worry about finding funding. And I'm making the film is also very different. And then distributing is another animal by itself. So I just, right before the Wine Dark Sea, I finished another very big project. It's called Antoine the Fortunate. And I think it's a very interesting documentary, and I would like to talk about it a little bit. And it was screened in Greece. Maybe I should try to screen it in Cyprus too. But basically, it's about the memoirs of an Austria-Hungarian soldier who was based in the Ottoman Empire in Istanbul at the time. And during World War I, and he's sent to Palestine, and he's in Gaza actually, and he sees the whole battle, and then they retreat back to Damascus and then to Istanbul. So he sees how the Austro-Hungarian Empire as well as the Ottoman Empire crumbled, and then how Turkish Republic was established. Yes,
created.
And he marries a Greek woman from Istanbul and then lives until the end of his life, almost until the end of his life in Turkey. And his memoirs are extensive. So we made the film. There's a website. If you Google Antoine Köppe, K-O-P-E, it would come up. And again, it was interesting because it was questioning what we are being told in about history during.
So obviously that's what motivates you when you see we all need to question the public narrative, whether it's in the classroom or whether in the home.
Yes.
That's a conversation I always have with my son. I said to him, you know what, I believe in inclusivity, whatever. I said, I don't really care what you believe in. But I want the thing I do care is that what you believe in is something you've questioned, something you can substantiate, something you understand why you believe. It must not be what they taught you at school or what I've taught you. It's got to be something that you've thought about, you've questioned, it fits into your psyche, and then it goes forward. So, but that's probably why you're a teacher, a lecturer, because you want to see the critical minds. You like to have the young students in front of you to see and nurture the critical thinking in them.
Yes, I enjoy teaching. But again, for example, we watch Hollywood movies and we try to critique them. And mostly students struggle with it because that's what they've been taught throughout their lives. That's the greatest thing that's possible, you know, watching Hollywood films or making Hollywood films. But once you go into detail and kind of dissect what's happening in the film, they see it. Some of them see it. Like how women are treated.
How women are treated. That's the simplest one, women are treated.
And sometimes they say, I don't see anything wrong with this. That's fine. Because all through their lives, that's what they watch. And not only women, of course, all the other minorities in Hollywood movies. And it's changing, but in the history of Hollywood movies, you know, African-Americans were not treated well. LGBT community was not treated well.
I was watching a movie last night, and it was quite a nice movie until they got to the part where the two men went to a strip club.
Yes.
And then you saw these naked women or very scantily dressed women bearing their bodies and rubbing against men. And then I thought, trafficked, prostitution. Yes. And I mean, once you've changed your lens of how you look at things, you can never unsee that. And I agree with you. It's not just the woman. It's the African American. It's the Latino. It's the disabled.
Yes. Native Americans also. And for example, there was an interesting moment in one of the classes last semester. There was a rape scene, and they said, "Well, you know, it's a rape scene, and they are showing the woman's body. Of course, they are going to film it that way. How else can they film it?" And I told them, well, they could have showed the man's terrible face and his voice and exaggerate his voice and his movements without showing the female body being raped. And they were like, oh, I never thought about it because they never questioned it. So,
Because you're right, if you show the man's anger or the fury or the madness or the whatever, it totally changes. It doesn't make it sexual anymore. It shows the true side of what rape actually is, because rape is not the woman's body. Yes. Rape is the rage of the man, of whatever he's doing.
Yes. So, you know, I keep making documentaries and I keep teaching. To be absolutely honest with you, I don't know how much change we achieve. You know, we try, we keep trying, and this is something we discuss with Iraklis as well. You know, we talk about the other town, you know, neighbors trying to understand each other. And then Russia goes and invades Ukraine. And it's been how many years? 3 years. And does it matter we made the other town or not? I don't know.
No, it does matter. Because, I mean, then you do all these movies and then there's an event on the 7th of October 2023 in Gaza, and suddenly people have been killed for the last two years. And it's okay. People are okaying it. People are okay with seeing this. I do know it's very easy to get despondent.
Mm-hmm. Well, no.
And think, am I making a difference? But you are. You can't stop.
I don't plan on stopping. But what I'm trying to say maybe documentary filmmaking is a very isolating business. You know, you film and then you go into the editing room and you edit for months and sometimes years. And then you screen it and you cannot be at all of the screenings. And you don't know what those people think after, you know, they leave the screening room. So, you know, and it's not tangible. You cannot hold it in your hands. Like,
it's not tangible.
So that's, I think, what I'm trying to say.
But you still have the bug and you're still going to carry on?
Yes, I will.
And Now, I think that happens to a lot of us that do things to question the public narrative, because I do a lot of activism work and I do podcasting and I do storytelling, and I think, is anyone listening? Is anyone listening? And or you and I are talking, and when you leave this room, is this conversation have made a difference to you? But it doesn't make a difference. I've still got to have this conversation. So I think we just got to keep on walking.
To answer your question, you asked me if it made a difference in me, and it did, because it means that you valued my documentaries, and you wanted to talk to me about it and also share this with the listeners. So it made a difference in me. Maybe our steps are baby steps, just very tiny, but maybe at the end it will get us somewhere.
No, I totally agree with you. It's little steps in different directions, but every step counts. I agree with you. We can't stop, because you also agreed to speak to me, which means you want to speak about it, which means we together we can spread the word.
Let's keep talking.
Any special memories that you want to share, or have you covered everything you would like to say about your...
I worked as an assistant director for a long while in Istanbul, because I was timid and shy, because this is how we are brought up, as women. They don't teach you, you can become an international documentary filmmaker. Just keep working on it. Nobody tells you that. But I remember a specific moment when I was an assistant director, and it was a very hard, demanding job, telling myself that I want to become a documentary filmmaker.
Oh, wow. At what age?
Late 20s or mid-20s. I knew I wanted to become a filmmaker, but I didn't know how to do it. But it was a constant struggle, constant fight, and I managed to do it. So I remember that very specific moment when I decided to do it, like to say, I'm a documentary film director. So what I'm, I guess, saying is that I'm a good example of, if you put your mind to it, you could do it.
I think it's a lesson we all like to teach our children. If you actually find the thing that moves you, you find that little spark in you that just makes you move, you can do anything.
Yes. It takes a lot of determination and time, but yes, you can become what you want to become. That's true.
And I think you also need to listen to yourself, because a lot of the time you can be governed what society has expectations of you, that you should be a teacher, you should be a lawyer, and you've got to quieten the voices about what you think you can be and how you would define yourself as succeeding, because succeeding is not just money. Money's good, but it doesn't have to be everything. But you need to do a lot of work inwards of how you see yourself, how you would be happy seeing yourself as you, not as regards other people.
And that's why right now I stopped a little bit to make films, and I'm kind of listening to myself to see what do I really want to make right now at this point in my life. And then I will continue making films. I just want to listen to myself for a little while.
Well, you all be also living in very turbulent times, and specific you living in America, Donald Trump, good or bad, has overturned everything. And it's you voted in him, the Americans, but it's affected the whole world order. And I think we all need to take a step back and see, is this good? Is this bad? Is this a time for us all to reassess? Because maybe we have been doing certain things wrong, but it's a time for all of us to reassess of what's important, and do I open my mouth and speak, or is this one battle I need to step away from? So I agree with you, it's a good time to reassess your position or what you really want. How old are your children? Have you got
they
one?
Are two. They are very young, 8 and 9. Very young.
Okay, that's nice. It's nice. I've got an old son. My son's 29. He's turning 30 next month. Whoa.
Yeah, you are lucky.
Yeah, children are always your children. You always worry about them. When they're small, the troubles are small. When they're big, the troubles are big. That's what they say in Greek. But, Nefin, I'm very glad we got to speak. Is there anything else you want to say, or can we say
goodbye? We can.
Goodbye.
Just two words. I think AI will change everything in filmmaking, in documentary filmmaking as well. And I'm maybe planning to incorporate AI substantially in my next project. I don't know how yet, but I'm considering it.
Well, to be honest, I think especially my generation that's slightly older, there's a certain fear about what AI is. But I was invited by a friend to a lecture about 2 weeks ago about AI in business. And I thought, because this was quite a world-famous lecture, and I went and I listened, and now I'm calmer. Don't understand it that much, but I think he said 4 or 5 things that helped me understand that if it's used properly, you can use it effectively. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. You just need to change slightly your thought process or the process in which you do things. So I agree with you. We all, I think AIs can affect us all in different ways, and we need to learn to be friends with
AI. True.
Not to consider it the enemy.
That's true. That's correct.
Okay, Nefin. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Have a lovely rest of the day, because your day has just started. And we'll speak soon. And stay safe.
You too. Thank you so much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.